south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, you know how we talk about sometimes when you go through airports, international airports, and those in the States, you get the third degree? Well, I told you what it's like here in Latin America. You know, we've got 20 Latin countries. And so far, we've got Panama, Colombia, and Costa Rica. Probing, filing, and stamping you now, too. That means fingerprints and iris scans. And now, new news from Captain Mango, who just flew the States recently. He had a layover at the Mexico City airport and said, now, Mexico's doing it, too. Even though he wasn't staying in Mexico at all, just on a layover, connecting flight. And who do you think is responsible for forcing all that crap on Latin American airports now, too? Why, the U.S. State Department and TSA, of course. Yep, they want to know exactly where their sheep are. It's like tagging a cow's ear. So there you have it, four or five Latin countries that have fallen in line with all that crap. Oh, and by the way, last time I flew, just about a month and a half ago now, I had a layover in Panama, and I noticed that some of the technical equipment, machines, iris scanners and stuff, had little metal labels on them saying that they were donated by some official U.S. agency. Can't remember which. I mean, really, there's only 6,000 of them, right? So there you have it. Third world countries can't afford that kind of equipment at their airports, so the U.S. steps in and kindly donates all that crap. So little by little, if you travel, you just can't escape getting tagged. So that leaves around 15 other Latin American countries that don't stick probes up your keister. Not yet, anyway, and a lot of them probably never will. Simply because in the countries that aren't gringoized yet, you know, the ones that international living hasn't been pumping up, why would they ever need facial recognition, profiling, and iris scans? In fact, the last time I came into Guatemala's international airport, you know, took my luggage off the carousel, and you walk up to immigration, and you press a button. If the light turns red, they stop you and go through all your stuff, and that's the plan. And if it turns green, you just walk right on through. Well, like I said, it was very recently, about a month and a half ago, and must have been around 9:30 or 10 at night. I think it was a Sunday, and man, there was almost no one at the airport. The workers and the security people outnumbered everyone who was getting off the plane. Anyway, came my turn to press the button, turned red. That means they're supposed to open up all your stuff and go through it with a fine-tooth comb. But remember, Guatemala is not a gringoized country. It is not on AARP or International Living's radar, thank God. Anyway, there were three immigration people just standing around talking to each other, two ladies and a guy, smiling, telling jokes, sucking down coffee. The light turned red, the buzzer went off. They looked at me and they just smiled and waved me right through. Like, ah, he looks harmless. Let him pass. So much for protocol, huh? You gotta love it, man. You gotta love it. You know, I can't even imagine something like that could ever happen up in the States. Oh, and speaking of flying, pretty much everyone knows by now it's considered the safest means of travel by far. I mean, you're more likely to get killed in your own home by your electric toothbrush or your washing machine. Yeah, I looked it up. Something like 3 people a year die by electric toothbrush. What an embarrassing way to go, huh? Well, in fact, it's kind of gory. You see, either the head falls off and the person swallows it and chokes, or in some cases, a person's way too aggressive with the thing, punctures the back of his throat, and, well, you don't want to know the rest. Hey, there are more noble ways to die, you know. So here's what I don't get. I mean, I've done lots of traveling. I'm one of those guys who've been through a lot of passports, not because they expired, but because the pages were too filled with stamps. But here's what I don't get. If flying is by far the safest means of travel, why, when you go to the airport, if you check out the airport lounge bars, all the seats are filled, even at 8 or 9 in the morning? Why is it that most adults are pounding one or two down before they can get up the nerve to go to the boarding gate? So if first world people in the States, Europe, etc., are slightly on edge about flying, or somewhat skittish anyway, why would they be pounding down drinks at 9 in the morning, you know? What about Latin American airlines like TACA, Aviateca, LAXA? You know, many Latin countries have their own airlines. Peru, Mexico, Argentina, Colombia. And of course, they all buy first world planes, Boeing and Airbus, etc. So they have the right equipment. In fact, these days, when you're sitting around a Latin airport, you can't help but admire they've got some brand new stuff right on the runway. Of course, we're talking about for international flights now. But what about taking local flights, in-country flights, puddle jumpers, so to speak? You know, you hate to think it's kind of like retired school buses up in the States stand up as chicken buses here in Latin America. How'd that happen? A fate worse than death, you would think. Hey, now, that would be a great Disney animated movie. An old American school bus ends up down in Honduras as a chicken bus. I'd go see it. But it's not what you think. Chicken buses start out as fabulous pieces of machinery. Of course, they get rebuilt and supercharged before they hit the roads down here, which is cool, and they really are in perfect shape the day they hit the highway. But after that, you know, about Latin and maintenance, right? That just might be the first and last time that chicken bus ever saw an oil change. So you have to wonder, where do all those thousands of 747s and old turboprops that flew the friendly skies in the 70s, 80s, and 90s end up? Yeah, and by the way, they can never use that slogan again, huh? Fly the friendly skies. Well, just like cars, they have auctions and scratch and dent sales on airplanes and jets, too. So then, who buys those things? Well, most of them ended up in Central and South America, kind of like the chicken bus thing, doing local routes, hauling freight, and probably a lot of drugs, too. But when you talk about international flights, they do have the best equipment, the same stuff you see in Houston, Miami, JFK, and O'Hare Field. And you know, when you buy a new airplane from Boeing or Airbus, you get a maintenance contract. And that's how they maintain international standards and certification to fly international routes. They don't pay millions of dollars for these planes only to have them serviced by the best of the best of the chicken bus and tuk-tuk mechanics. All right, so that's true, but how do you get gringos to believe that? I mean, they see the utter lack of maintenance with everything else here in Latin America. Chicken buses, cop cars, and other government vehicles being great examples. Not to mention the roads, the bathrooms, and the mail service. Oh, and regarding maintenance contracts, people ask me about hospital equipment here in Latin America, too. Sure, the stuff looks good standing there, but is it really in tip-top condition? Well, the fact is, all those high-end first-world hospitals here in Latin America have all the machines you'll see in hospitals up in the States, and most all of the companies that sell the big stuff, like CAT scanners, NMRs, Dopplers, lipotropter machines. Try wrapping your tongue around that word after a couple of tequilas. Anyway, those companies won't even sell a machine without a service contract, which is why you'll always see GE Medical, who makes most of the big stuff, they'll have a service office in every big Latin city. In fact, there's one Latin emergency room doc told me, he said, every couple of months, the GE Medical guy will come into the hospital and update all the firmware on all the GE Medical equipment. And then he pointed to an NMR machine that they had for, I think it was 2.5 years, and he said it's already had 7 software updates. And he says no one has to call them up and pester them to come over. They just show up and do it automatically. Hey, that's good to hear, right? So down here in Latin America, when you're talking about expensive technical equipment, service contract is the way to go. And at international airports, it's mandatory or they won't get certified to allow flights coming in from other countries. And you know, I've spent some time in airports with expat Eddie. He's always good for a laugh. As they say in Spanish, muy divertido. Yep, he's one of those 9 in the morning airport lounge boozers. And man, can he hold his booze. And I remember one morning we were sitting in an airport lounge looking over a Laxa 767 that was getting refueled, and Laxa is the Costa Rican airline. And Eddie said, hey, look, Johnny, see those guys with the flak jackets walking around with tablets and clipboards, circling the plane, checking things out? He said, Johnny, you know, I wouldn't doubt that's a show. They're doing it just for the gringos because they know a Laxa jet's going to be filled to the brim with gringo tourists coming and going, and a lot of them for the first time, and they're kind of nervous flying a Latin airline. So we watched for a while. And you know, a bunch of official-looking mechanic guys going around the plane, counting the engines, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then doing it twice, kicking the tires and all that. Oh, and one thing about tires, you know, they look underinflated, slightly flat, and that's normal. They develop tremendous heat when they go down the runway and thus expand. So it is really necessary for people to run around the plane and kick them, right? That should calm any idiot gringo who's got a case of the nerves, huh? Yeah, but they really did look professional and serious while they were doing it. Anyway, that's when Eddie said something like, Johnny, look at those guys. They're not doing dick. The D word being one of Eddie's favorite replacements for the S word, as in poop with an S. Oh, and another thing, if you've been around Latin airports as much as I have, you'll notice all the Latin flight crews are pint size. But definitely the azafatas, that's the stewardesses, are always better looking than their first world counterparts. How'd that happen? It's lag time, man, and lots of it. You know, up in the States, airlines have to follow all the first world labor regulations. They can't get rid of you when you're no longer young and attractive. You can keep the job until you retire. Whereas down here in Latin America, it's still a lot like the way it was back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s back in the States. Back then, every young guy had this stereotypical impression that stewardesses were all young, attractive, and untouchable. Yep, and back then they did call them stewardesses. But all that changed when airlines started allowing men to do that job too. Talk about job discrimination against straight guys, huh? So in the Latin airline industry, lag time strikes again. Anyway, as mentioned, if you happen to be hanging around an airport here in Latin America, you'll certainly notice that flight crew members are generally much happier than their first world counterparts, and they're often well over 4.5 feet tall. And it's true, there really is a difference between Latin and first world flight crews. Yep, they're joking and talking and having a good old time. They're happy. Hey, you know, it's good when your pilot's happy, right? I mean, come on, who wants to be a passenger in a plane of an evil-looking pilot hauling a lot of negative energy around with him? Hey, I've seen a few of those in my time, especially on Eastern European flights. And by the way, the pilots are all chain smokers. Their fingers are yellow. And Russian pilots are even worse. I'm sure they all have a few stiff ones before they get on the plane, and maybe while they're in the plane, too. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. Talking about happy, upbeat Latin pilots and flight attendants who aren't putting on an act. All right, you might think that's part of the Latin happiness thing, you know? But I kind of think it's more than that. You see, Latin pilots who do mostly all Latin routes make between 30 and 50K a year. I mean, really, that's about what a glorified bank teller makes in the States. In Cleveland, that's barely middle class. But remember, as compared to where they came from, Colombia, Guatemala, El Salvador, Bolivia, that's around 10 times the minimum wage. And besides, they get a spiffy uniform. They put them up in nice first-class hotels. They get a food and laundry allowance. They can save practically all that dough. So really, I can understand why they're so happy. And again, always remember, there's nothing like a happy pilot. Even better, a happy pilot who's sober. Oh, in regards to flying, just one more thing that's never made sense to me. Now, if you ever talk to an airline pilot, he'll tell you that once in a while they have to dump some fuel for whatever reason. If you look it up, you'll find that each day there are over 102,000 air flights. So every day, somewhere, at some time, someone's dumping fuel. Every pilot will admit that. For whatever reason, ballast, weather conditions, who knows? Now look, if you or I were driving our cars and we happen to pull over and dump or even accidentally spill just a pint of gas or oil alongside the road, in the weeds, whatever, or if you're changing your oil and you don't put it in the right container and dispose of it properly, well, if caught, you'd be looking at least a $500 fine. Certainly, you'd be labeled an eco-terrorist. Don't you think there's something wrong with that picture? Oh, and speaking of labels, the other day I was talking to a bunch of college kids here in Latin America. They were going to one of those big public universities that's virtually free, and you know, you get what you pay for, like this show. And their English really sucked, but they did try it on me. Yep, even though they all were enrolled in English classes at the college, man, did their English suck. In fact, one of them told me his teacher had never been to the States, nor did his teacher have any gringos to talk to. Oh man, that's a hell of a way to learn a language, huh? Which is why it's not working out so well for them. Anyway, we got to talking about this LGBTQT whatever it is stuff, because I wanted to know if they had any of those organizations on campus, because this particular group I was talking to go to public university in Guatemala, in which the stats say, believe it or not, there are over 100,000 kids enrolled. And with these guys, actually it was three guys and two girls, they all kind of looked at each other like they didn't know what I was talking about when I mentioned the LGBTQT thing. And I said, you mean the gays and lesbians and gender benders don't have any kind of organizations at all? And they said, well, maybe they do, but we haven't heard about them. And remember, we're talking about a campus of 100,000 kids. By the way, public university campuses in Latin America do not have dormitories. Everyone comes in from home, kind of like junior colleges up in the States, commuter colleges, basically. And almost every one of the kids that goes to these crappy public universities works a job because, you see, they absolutely have to. Anyway, back to this LGBTQT thing, whatever. Now, get this. When I told them that up in the States, there aren't just five genders anymore, you know, male, female, gay, lesbian, and transsexual, I guess. And you can look this up, that there's actually, by last count, 51 different gender bender options. So after I said that, they thought I was telling a joke and were waiting for a punchline. So there was a pregnant pause, and one of them said, E, which means and in Spanish, but there wasn't one, which made them feel even worse about their crappy English skills. So lag time effect here in Latin America on an LGBTQT whatever front seems to be a non-starter. Believe me, if you can't find gender bender activist groups on a public campus of 100,000 people, they've got a long way to go. And some say that's a good thing. Latins say it's a good thing. And why not? There are a million more important things to think about. And you know, not so long ago, I actually took a look at that list of 51 gender bender designations or options. I noticed they seem to have forgotten one designation. That would be one bald midget albino crossdressers. I'm bringing that up because I believe that's a group that's generally been heavily discriminated against, if not ignored altogether. And you know, the thing is, if they've been intentionally left off the list, I say, time for a class action lawsuit. I'm sure you're with me on that. Which reminds me of a saying I picked up from Expat Eddie. He says, life sucks, especially if you're stupid. And my mom used to say, the more you know, the more you worry. And the flip side of that, no brains, no headaches. Though I have to admit, over the years, I've met a lot of people with great brain power, though most of them seem to be operating with the wrong user's manual. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, and for all you listeners waiting for that sex, drugs, and rock and roll expats Eddie story that I've been promising to tell you, I'll get to it. It almost rolled out today, but other things either got in the way or took precedence. We'll get to it, because I wanted to tell you this boots-on-the-ground story first. Just a few days ago, I got a call from a gringa, one of the ladies who came to a previous expat insider seminar, and she's moved here to Central America. She's off the gringo tourist trail. Her Spanish sucks. But she's smart, creative, and a good listener, so she signed up for one of those big Latin bank-affiliated medical health insurance plans that you hear me talk about once in a while. That's the stuff, by the way, we go into great detail on at the Expat Insider Seminar. So she's been on the plan a year and a half now, and that means the pre-existing condition thing doesn't exist for her anymore. It's usually a 6 month to a year waiting period on that stuff with any insurance company. So she's paying slightly under $100 a month for a really nice first world-like insurance plan. She's had it for a year and a half and hasn't used it at all till this week. And that's why she called me. She wanted me to help her make the appointment because in this particular plan, you dial a number, you get a call center, and they'll make appointments for you, etc. So I dialed this four-digit hotline number, and I got through to the call center in two rings. And of course, it's all in Spanish. Isn't it funny? There's none of that press two for English crap. Yeah, I get you thinking, huh? By the way, these hospital plan call centers are right inside the hospital. Nope, they don't farm it out. They keep it in-house. That's a good thing. So often, if you're walking through a hospital, you'll come across a room where you'll see six or seven people working the phones. But back to our gringo lady looking to get an appointment. She really doesn't have any serious medical problems, but she says she has some unsightly spider veins on her legs, and she's heard and read that you could have injections or laser treatments and eliminate them completely. So I made her appointment over the phone with what the call center guy said was a phlebotomist. All right, so far so good, and that was about a week ago. Then yesterday, I got a call from that lady. She said, Johnny, I got to tell you a story. She says my appointment was 5 in the afternoon on a Monday at a big, nice hospital where there was a suite of rooms with little plaques listing specialties on each door. There were maybe 15 chairs in the waiting room and only 3 people there. Then she said, in her own words, at exactly 5:10, I'm admitted into the room with the doctor. Now, on my way to the office, I went through the parking lot. Everyone spoke Spanish. She said, went to the receptionist. She spoke Spanish. She directed me down the hall. I got lost, and I asked other people where I was supposed to go, and they spoke Spanish. And finally, being I'm a gringa, I got there early. At 5 o'clock, I was at the door. I was let in. The lady doctor, around, I'd say, 35, 37 years old, instantly started speaking to me in English. Her English was very good. I'd say about 90%. First thing she said after introducing herself was, oh, I'm so glad we can speak in English. I never get to practice my English, and this is a real treat for me. And then the lady gringa patient said, well, where'd you learn your English? She says, I attended grade school and high school at the Austrian school in Guatemala. Now, you heard me say in past shows there are all kinds of upscale private helicopter schools. They've got the English school, the American school, French school, the Italian school, Montessori, and any number of other schools. And some of those schools, like the French, Italian, Austrian, and German schools, are trilingual. They teach in English, Spanish, and their country of origin's language. So this lady doctor spoke Spanish, English, and German. And then the gringo lady asked her, what's it take to be a phlebotomist? She said, oh, that's just what they call us. In fact, I'm an MD and a vascular surgeon. I took my specialty in Madrid, Spain. Then my gringo friend said, you won't believe it, Johnny. We sat down and she went over a complete history of my health, the whole works. I was in her office for an hour. And she said, Johnny, I got to tell you, where I come from on the East Coast, I don't think I've ever had a doctor's appointment where he spent more than 7 minutes with me. Then she did an ultrasound on my legs. Then she explained about leg veins and arteries and circulation and all that. And in the end, she said to determine which method to use to get rid of those veins, she ordered another test, a Doppler test. I never heard of that. And she made me an appointment the following Friday to go to one of the bigger hospitals in the group where they have those particular machines. Oh, and get this. When I set up that appointment for her with the call center, it was a Thursday. And I said, when's the soonest you can get her in? They said, well, where does she live? Because we have a total of 9 clinics and hospitals where we can set her up with an appointment. And the hospital she picked closest to her place, they didn't have an appointment with a so-called phlebotomist for a week and a half. And I said, well, anything sooner? And they told me, yes, Monday, but at another location, about 5 miles farther out, which was fine with her. But the point is, she was able to call and get an appointment at a specialist in 3 days. How does that stack up to trying to get a specialist appointment up in the States? You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, she had an hour with not a phlebotomist, but a vascular surgeon. And she did an ultrasound. And her total co-payment for that experience? $11. Oh, and $2 for parking. So that's the kind of coverage she gets from one of those private medical plans obtained through one of the bigger banks here in Latin America. But you know, if you were to come down and try to hook up with one of those bank plans yourself, believe me, it's very confusing because probably 10 banks offer such plans. They're not the only good plans too, though they're sometimes the easiest for gringos and expats to get on when they first come down. Why banks? Well, because they're the underwriters, and since every middle and upper class Latin has a bank account, that's an easy marketing scheme when you come in and do some business. Hey, want to buy some insurance? We've got it right here at the bank, and we can do direct deductions every month. You know the scheme, just like up in the States. Or maybe it isn't. I wouldn't know. At any rate, we'll be following up on the case of the spider veins, what the costs and the treatments will be, and how it pans out. Should be interesting and a nice take on a first-time hospital doctor visit for a gringa, well off the tourist trail, whose Spanish sucks. My take on this is something you might not have thought of. I'm thinking, hey, with this spider vein thing, that's cosmetic, and insurance generally doesn't pay for such things, right? Almost none of them do, even in the first world. So we'll be tracking that, too, and see how much the insurance pays or doesn't pay, and how much she has to pay out of her pocket. So stay tuned for that. Oh, and by the way, one thing you really have to look out for when you're shopping for healthcare insurance in whatever Latin country. Of course, you should never be sucked in by the promises of the national healthcare systems. Even though you'll hear people in Costa Rica, Colombia, and Ecuador telling you how great they are, well, the services are spotty at best. You'll have terribly long waiting times. The hospitals are scruffy, look kind of like dungeons. I mean, what do you expect? Those things are run by the government, right? Anyway, I always say those are the stops of last resort. If you get an accident in front of a public hospital, by all means, go into the emergency room. That's one thing they're good at. That's where they take all the motorcycle crash victims. Yes, trauma medicine is their specialty. Not much else. Now, you know, in the last couple of years, a lot of gringos and expats have run to Ecuador because International Living and such said how great their new revised and revamped public national healthcare system is, only to find out not so long ago, a couple months ago, that it's completely bankrupt. In fact, it's a couple of billion dollars in debt. So is that the kind of system you want to get into? Anyway, we were saying you got to look out for one particular thing when shopping for healthcare insurance in any Latin country. In many, many cases, you'll find if you're at a certain age, you can no longer enroll. That's not to say, for example, if you enroll at 55, you can't go to age 100. But it's that enrollment age point that you got to worry about. Take Colombia, for example. They've got a lot of private healthcare options in Colombia, but almost all the plans I've ever seen will not let you enroll if you're over 62 years old. But again, like I said, if you're under that age and enroll, as long as you keep up the payments, you can roll to 100. But that's not always the case either. There's lots of insurance plans, private insurance plans, where there is an age cutoff limit. So, for example, when you hit 70, hey, you're off the plan. That sucks. So those are the things you have to know about and you have to look out for when you're shopping around. However, for example, in Guatemala, one of the very good health insurance plans, that's one of those bank-owned and operated jobs, it's very cheap, maybe $75 a month for a single and $110 for a family. But once you hit age 65, it's not over. They don't kick you off. It's just that some of the benefit limits are lowered. For example, instead of a yearly coverage limit of, let's say, $50,000, when you hit 65, it's $25,000. Now, normally the premiums don't change, just the limits of coverage drop a bit. Oh, and another thing that's really important to know, and I know I've mentioned this before, but you have to let this sink in. Suppose you're looking at a nice private health insurance plan. It's $100 a month or whatever, but it's only got a lifetime payout limit of, let's say, $250,000 or $200,000. Well, you know, in the States, if you have a big operation, you could easily go over $100,000 and then you'd pretty much wipe out that policy, right? Up in the States, yes, but not down here in Latin America. Because remember, medical costs are a sixth to one-tenth of what they are up in the States. So I always tell people, when you look at the limit on a policy that's being offered, always multiply that by 5 or 6 to get a general idea of what that policy would compare to if you were up in the States. So for example, if there's a $200,000 lifetime limit on the payout, multiply it by, let's say, 5, and it's $1 million. And that would be an equivalent amount of coverage if it were up in the States. You get the idea. So in the end, don't let a small lifetime limit or yearly limit, they have those too, you know, scare you. Don't think you'll be way underinsured because the limits are low. Remember, the amazingly low medical costs are one of the huge advantages to living here in Latin America. On the other hand, don't let the broker or whoever oversell you. That is, try to sell you a lifetime limit that's up there in the millions. I know, you're accustomed to having that in the States, but it's never necessary here. Talk about overkill. By the way, only private brokers will try to oversell you. And it's always because you're a gringo and they think you want a gigantic limit. If you get one of those insurance policies through a bank, they'll never oversell you because they're set up for the average Latino. And as an example, if you were to select a plan with a $250,000 lifetime limit, you might pay $100 or $125 a month, whatever. And then, of course, the broker just might say, I've heard this scenario many times. But of course, you're a gringo, a first world person, so you might want to have $500,000 or $1 million or more. Well, don't let them sucker punch you with that, because suddenly that $100, $125 a month policy is going to turn into $300, $400, or $500 a month. And those kind of monthly payments start looking a lot like old vomit care. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!